Yeah, this is Andy Camp.
Andy,
how are you?
Photographer, is it okay to take some
pictures? Sure. Hey, why don't we, have you had breakfast yet or lunch?
Neither.
Well, let's go down to the garden district. We really like this.
The greatest fight scene of all time is in one of the, you know, millions and millions of people or something who brought up China for it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot cheaper and faster that way too, right?
Yeah.
Because you rent the equipment and you can use it whenever you want. So you can pay $1,000 a day.
Just you can run into a studio and try and practice something.
This will be the first record we're actually doing without a producer. We use the same engineer that we've always had, Bruce Botman. I don't know if he'll be called a producer or not, probably a co-producer.
We'll be kind of owners and him up
there. Yeah. But, so that'll be a big change, too. In the past, the producer was, it's not that it was a bad influence or anything, but this will be, it'll be a lot different, not having that fifth person as
fifth viewpoint.
Right.
Usually they can put a different viewpoint.
So we'll either find ourselves or we'll find something interesting.
What's going to be the first absolutely new stuff you've done in a couple of years? Yeah. 13 is the greatest hits, and a lot of stuff is stuff you've been doing in concert.
Yeah, there were a few new ones on that. A year ago we finished Morrison Hotel.
Whatever happened with it, there were a lot of other buses around also, right?
Everything else I'm going to put it on. So we're trying to get this erased because it's not good to have something like that on the record. Right?
Are you still concerned with the kind of record?
It's just if something really serious happened, then you'd have a record and it makes it a lot worse, you know?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's not fun.
When they looked for, a while like they were out to get you, like, there was like a federal hijacking bust or something also? Someone was telling you?
Well, it came under a law that was created because of hijacking, but it wasn't really a hijacking exploit. It was just you know, it wasn't a threat to anybody's safety or anything. And actually, we were acquitted because the stewardesses mistook me for someone else that I was with. Oh yeah, sure.
They mistook you for someone you were with?
Yeah, and so they were going by the seat identification. They were saying the person in such and such a seat was causing all this trouble, and then they all identified me as being in another seat. So they were just trying to hang me, you know, because I was the only one that was had a well-known face or something, so they were trying to get me for it. I don't know, I guess as an example of the people who behave in airplanes. So, the trouble with all these busts is people that I know, friends of mine, think it's really funny and they like to believe it's true. So they accept it. And then people that don't like me want to believe it because it's incarnation of everything they consider evil, so they get hung both ways, you know.
What, how did they're just acquitted before anything happened?
I went through a trial there in Phoenix, too. I had to go back several times to get that cleared up. Good afternoon.
Actually, hey, how are you? Anybody want a cocktail before you order? Is that tequila with
tequila?
That sounds good. I'll try one of those.
No, I'm not good. No, never make it through the day.
Black and coffee?
Yeah. It's always disorienting when you just get up and there's a luncheon menu.
I know, I just got up myself.
I can make up something.
Oh, wait.
What does it look like your chances are in Miami of getting off? It's now just one misdemeanor charge?
Well, two misdemeanors. Well, I have to be optimistic, so I think there's a good chance. We're gonna contend it on several grounds. First of all, they never really proved anything except profanity, which we admitted all along, that there was profanity used in the performance. And we were going to attempt to prove that that did not violate contemporary community standards in the city of Miami. And to do that, we were going to take the jury to see a lot of movies, like Woodstock, and Hair was playing in town at that time, and they had nudity on stage every night, and they were allowing young people to go in of any age, and all the books that were available, even in school libraries, junior high school libraries, with four-letter words. So the judge refused to allow any investigation along those lines and limited it to a criminal action. Well, they brought on about 13 witnesses. Every witness was either a policeman who was working there that night or someone who worked for the city and happened to be there, or a relative of a policeman. In fact, that was their biggest witness, was a 16-year-old girl who was the niece of a police officer who got her on a date and free that night. And all their testimony was very contradictory. You know, every one of them had a different version of
I heard that
what happened.
I heard that girl called someone a little bitch. Yeah.
I didn't hear her do it. That's what I heard. They had thousands of photographs from many different people that were there, and there was no photograph of an exposure or anything near it. And the other charges, I think they just put in there to make it look more serious, you know, simulated masturbation and oral copulation.
With yourself?
Yeah, masturbation on myself and oral copulation on the guitar player. There's a picture of that in the inside sleeve of that Best Hits album. That was their big proof, you know.
What is the picture with a lamb on the end of your hand? A lamb head?
No, it's a real lamb. That guy, Lewis Marvin, you know, the Moonfire, he happened to be down there. He travels around spreading his philosophy of nonviolence and vegetarianism. And he carried this little lamb around to demonstrate his principles. In other words, if you eat meat, you know you're killing this little lamb. So He gave it to me during the middle of the show, and I just held him for a while. It was really interesting that there was a lot of noise and a lot of commotion. It was almost deafening in the auditorium, but the lamb was breathing normally, almost purring like a kitten. It was very completely relaxed. I guess what they say about lambs to the slaughter is true, you know? They don't feel a thing. Anyway, the judge limited the defense's witnesses. We had 300 witnesses who were there, and we were going to parade them all in to get their side of it. He limited the defense to the number of witnesses that the prosecution brought on, which is an entirely arbitrary maneuver.
Did the 300 witnesses volunteer? Were they
some of
them?
Yeah, a lot of them did, and just through the grapevine, you know. But we had over 300 people that were willing to testify, and they were there. I didn't see anything of any of those alleged incidents. What it turns out that actually happened was a journalist happened to be there or heard about this concert, and the next day he went and wrote a sensational front page story about the concert, about inciting the riot, and the citizens became irate and began calling the police station asking why this had been allowed to go on and why wasn't I arrested. And I'd gotten up and gone on to Jamaica for a holiday that had been planned down there. And so about 3 or 4 days after the whole thing, they swore out a warrant for me. So you can kind of see how the whole thing, you know, began.
One of the things that just bothered me, I spoke to Mike Gershman when he was down there with you. And he said you weren't able to perform during the whole course of the trial. But is that true, or were you doing performances?
The only one we did during the trial went on for 2 months.
Did they put any limits on you as far as where you could travel or anything like that?
Not really. They might have, but we just went ahead and did a few things. But actually, the only thing I did was to fly to the Isle of Wight for a day, and then I came right back. We could have done it, but really, we never knew from one day to the next when court was in session. You know,
they were doing an alternate day.
Yeah, and he changed it every day, so we never knew. So to have flown somewhere for a couple days, I really needed the weekends to rest up. You know, it was kind of an ordeal.
Do you think the whole thing was because of the way it came out, like the arbitrary, and just a question of out to get you or out to get a rock culture?
Yeah, I think it was really a lifestyle that they were going after. I don't think it was me personally. I just kind of stepped into a hornet's nest. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that the sentiment down there was so tender. The audience that was there really enjoyed it. You know, it was, I think people reading about it in the paper, this distorted version, created a climate of hysteria. And then a few weeks later, they had an anti-indecency rally at the Orange Bowl with a famous fat comedian, his MC.
Yeah, well known for his decency.
Right. And
train.
And the president congratulated the kid that started this rally. They had them all over the country. So I wasted a lot of time and energy on that thing, but about a year and a half of kind of a gnawing disquiet about it. But I guess it was a valuable experience, because I think before the trial I had a a very unrealistic schoolboy attitude about the American judicial system. And my eyes have been opened up a little bit. There were guys down there, black guys, that would go on each day before I'd go on. Like for, it'd take about 5 minutes and they'd get 20, 30 years in jail, you know.
Their trial.
Yeah, and if I hadn't had unlimited funds to continue fighting my case, I'd be in jail right now for 3 years. It's just, if you got money, you generally don't go to jail. It's about...
Did you find yourself excluded from the entire proceedings, like the way I think Manson feels, that he's not even a part of the trial? There's a whole system going on.
Yeah, I felt like a spectator, but I wouldn't have wanted to defend myself because I would have blown it, I'm sure. It's not as easy as it looks, you know.
Did you ever get to testify at all?
Yeah, I didn't have to testify, but we decided it might be a good thing for the jury to see what I was like because all they could do is look at me for 6 weeks or whatever it was. So I testified a couple of days. I don't think it meant anything one way or the other.
Did you still have ties with Pepini Theater? Have you seen Children of the Kingdom?
I saw half of it, but I was so uncomfortable I couldn't sit through the rest of it.
Just because of the theater? Or because of the show?
Because of the show, I was just, it made me really uneasy. You know, you see it. Not that I don't appreciate satire, but...
Is that what that was?
Yeah, it was satire. I like satire, but it just hit too close to home, you know, it made me real edgy, so I had to get it split. But I enjoy their work, especially that maze ritual they have on Sunday, the Liquid Theater. That's one of the most interesting things they do. Yeah, I don't know very many of them personally, but I've been attending their things off and on for a couple of years. I'm glad and amazed that they managed to keep going. I think that's great.
I was curious because the story is, you know, in ways parallels the kind of performer that he's the protagonist there is depicted to be. Is this the vibrant show thing, and there's some sort of, at least I thought, you know, insight into what's going on in the performer's head. I mean, why do you think people go to see a rock concert, especially if they're going to be too noisy to hear the music?
Oh, I think people enjoy being in crowds. It gives them a feeling of power and security in a strange way. They like to rub up against hundreds of other people that are like them. It kind of reinforces their truth.
And what's your function in that as a performer, just getting them together?
Yeah, it's just to be a focus for everyone's attention because you have to have an excuse to mob together. You can't just, otherwise it'd just be, what would you call that? That would be a riot or something, wouldn't it? I think it has to do also with...
It probably has to do with a person's terminology, because lots of people would term what goes on at a Doors concert a riot. You know, whereas you may not or I may not.
No, we never really had any riots. A riot's a more out-of-control, violent thing. We never had too much what I'd call a real riot. I think it also... It has something to do with swarming theory. The idea that... An insect and animal species, when the food supply, the population starts outstripping the food supply, the animals or insects swarm together. It's a way of communicating and working out a solution. or making each other signaling their awareness that there is a danger. And in nature, somehow a balance is worked out, and I think that's what, for example, in LA or New York, in many big cities, you feel crowded. You feel psychologically crowded and just physically crowded. People are getting very neurotic and paranoid. And I guess things like rock concerts are a form of human swarming to communicate this unease about overpopulation.
Okay, answer.
I don't think it's not really well worked out yet, you know. I think there's something in it.
I heard you were going to try and do more club things, do whiskey things. I read the Rolling Stone interview with you. You said you might want to drop by the whiskey and just do guest sets unannounced.
Oh, I said that years ago.
It wasn't this year's Rolling Stone interview?
It was last year's
Rolling Stone interview.
Yeah, I was trying to get everybody to do that about a year ago, and no one wanted to, and now they kind of want to, and I totally lost interest. Although, I know it's a lot of fun, but I just don't have the desire to get up and sing much. I still enjoy music, but I don't really, kind of lost my interest for it.
Performing? Are you going to go more into doing your films?
Yeah,
poetry?
Films, I think. But there's no big hurry on that.
You've done about 5 films to date, or 5 that have been shown at least.
Yeah, 2 of them are. Well, 1 of them really is a real film. The other ones are real short ones.
Well, there's Feast of Friends and Highway and a few promotion films.
The Highway is the only really film I did. The others were more I was actively involved in them, but they weren't really totally my film. But The Highway is, to a large degree. I always see films as a team effort, you know, except in rare cases. But yeah, I'd like to get Highway shown. I think maybe it might work in educational television, NET. It's about the right length. See, it's an uncommercial type film. It's too long for a short to play with another feature, and it's not a feature itself. 50 minutes. So it's an awkward length. I don't know. I think maybe educational TV might be a good spot for it. You've seen it, haven't you, Pat?
No.
You didn't see it?
I think I left
right at you. Next time I show it, I'll invite you over to see it. You didn't see it.
No, I haven't. What's it about? Kind of, if it's the kind of movie you can say, what is it about?
There's no story. Really, no real narrative, except there's a hitchhiker who we don't see it, but then we later assume that he stole a car, and drives into the city, and then it just ends there, as he gets into the city, checks into a motel, and goes out to a nightclub or somewhere, and it just kind of ends like that.
This is sounds a little like in the Lords, the Oswald scene as a theme for a movie. Is that what that was?
I guess they're related. I had always been fascinated with a story about a hitchhiker who becomes a mass murderer. And I set out to make that film, but it turned into a different film, a much more subtle fantasy. Someday I'd still like to make that hitchhiker film, though, because I think it's a good one.
You play the hitchhiker in Highway? Is that something? Is acting something you want to get into? As
no, it was just easier.
Well, I don't know, it's heavy, but the cameras are. They're getting lighter and lighter. It's amazing. You know, actually, I realize now we didn't really have to be 35. You know, 16 would have been probably.
One thing's pretty nice, 16. Yeah. And you can blow them up.
Yeah. And the other thing, for example, Woodstock is all 16. The quality is.
I think it's very
good. A couple of things that you said about film kind of interest me, like the appeal of film is in the fear of death, something like the appeal of cinema lies in the fear of death. Is it something you can explain?
I just meant that I think in art, but especially in films, people are trying to confirm their own existence. Somehow they seem more real. Somehow things seem more real if they can be photographed and, you know, if you can create a semblance of life on a screen. But, you know, those little aphorisms that make up most of the Lords, if I could have said it any other way, I would have, you know. They're kind of to be mulled over. And not taken too seriously, but I did most of that book when I was at the film school at UCLA, and it was really a thesis on film aesthetics, because I wasn't able to make films then, so all I could do was think about them and write about them, and that's probably, reflects a lot of that. But then a lot of the passages in it, for example about shamanism, turned out to be very prophetic several years later, because that's, I had no idea when I was writing that, but that's what I'd be doing, but that's how it, that's what it turned into.
As curiosity, it says on the liner of the book that your ambition is to be a film director. Is that your ambition?
Yeah. That's what I'd like to do.
Another thing, I like at the end where you kind of define the Lords as the people that are controlling art. Did I understand that right? Or that are enslaving people by giving them enough art?
Strangely enough, that's what I meant. Is anyone ready to order? Do you think we should?
Special today is mumbles.
Veal and peppers. It's
okay. Some spaghetti with some veal, pepper, mushroom.
I'll go for crassness one more and have a grilled cheese.
Just plain grilled cheese?
Right. Your play.
The Reuben is good. It's like
what don't you need?
Did you like this? You did? You want another one? Okay, yeah, she'll have another one and I'll have a beer, I guess.
Miguel,
yeah, that's great. Oh, so yeah, I not controlling art necessarily, but just really what that book is a lot about is the feeling of powerlessness and helplessness people have in the face of reality that they have no real control over events or their own lives, that something is controlling it. But the closest they ever get to it is on a television set. Mm-hmm. But in creating this idea of the Lords, it also, I think, came to reverse itself. And now to me, the Lords means something entirely different. I couldn't quite explain it. But almost the opposite of that. You know, somehow the Lords are a romantic race of people who have found a way to control their environment and their own lives. They're somehow different from other people.
Is there a particular person that you could think of?
No, it's not about any particular person.
I want to talk a bit about your poetry also.
Sure. Go ahead.
Overly sensitive. The new creatures. And there's a lot of creatures in everything you do. Lizards and snakes and snake skins and this kind of thing. That's part of your reputation, I think, is just the Lizard King. How does all that come about? Or has
well,
it
I had a book on reptiles, snakes and reptiles. And the first sentence of it struck me very acutely. It goes, reptiles are the interesting descendants of magnificent ancestors. And another thing about them is they're a complete anachronism. If every reptile in the world were to disappear tomorrow, it wouldn't really change the balance of nature one bit. They're completely arbitrary species. And I think maybe they might, you know, if any creature could survive another world war or some kind of total poisoning of the planet, I think somehow reptiles would find a way to make it.
Does that fit into your own self concept as being that kind of? And once the appellation is transferred to you, does that put you in the same kind of class? Just curiosity, you know, your own.
Well, also, we must not forget that the lizard and the snake are also identified with the unconscious and with the forces of evil. You know, they're the devil's gang. Reptiles are. And that piece, The Celebration of the Lizard, was kind of a invocation of dark forces, but it's all done tongue-in-cheek. I don't think people ever realize that, but it's not really serious, you know. Uh-huh. It's just like if you play a villain in a Western, that doesn't mean that that's you. I mean, that's just an aspect that you choose to show. You know? So I don't really take that seriously.
All the lizard thing and Lizard King and all that.
That's supposed to be ironic. You know. Also, you know, and on a much more basic level, I've just always loved reptiles, horned toads. I grew up in the Southwest for part of my life, and I used to catch horned toads and lizards, and of course snakes are, I still can't get too near snakes somehow. They still have kind of a, I mean, it's hard for me to pick up a snake and play with it. Some people can do it quite easily. But there's something deep in the human memory that responds strongly to snakes. You know, they're probably
childhood dreams and all those snakes, you know, in one form or another.
Even if you've never seen one, you have like a dragon, you know, St. George and the dragon. I think a snake just embodies probably everything we fear, you know. And but also, you know, basically their skins are just beautiful, you know. I guess that's why they become so fashionable. And I think they always have been, you know, but recently, snake skin clothes and boots and,
there's probably also a little victory in taking the snake and wearing it.
Yeah,
right. Sort of immunity.
Right. Sure. What do they call that? A totem or something? Or not a totem. What's a good luck? A talisman.
Talisman.
Yeah.